Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's 5 at 5
with Mully and Hall,
where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
A St. Louis Post-Dispatch headline Sunday referred to Chris Bryant as disgruntled over a column on why the Cubs need to trade him to avoid distraction. Which is more threatening to the Cubs, actually alienating Bryant by keeping him in limbo, or the perception that they are doing so and damaging the team's reputation for dealing with players?
I think they've dealt with Chris Bryant pretty well over the years in terms of, you know, giving him a little more money when they went to arbitration and all that stuff. They've tried to be fair about it. I don't know that him hanging in limbo. I know this is a big storyline, this idea that now you have to trade him or he's going to become a distraction. And, oh, my God, how are they going to get through the season? If Chris Bryant doesn't seem to me the kind of guy, you know, described as disgruntled. What's disgruntled with Chris Bryant? I mean, is he going to go off on anyone? Is he a bad soldier in any way?
He won't compliment you today.
Yeah, I mean, that's about right. I just it's hard for me to envision a way in which he's going to, like, somehow blow up the clubhouse. Are they being fair to him? Are they being right with him? They offered him a contract. The two sides have totally different views of it. I'm not even sure that it's accurate to say that that it's damaging their reputation for dealing with players. I think they've dealt with players pretty well, and I think they've been fair with players. And I don't think that – I think they've also paid a lot of players. And I think that when it gets to free agency, it's not like, oh, I'm not going to go there. Look what they did to Chris Bryant. It's more like, hey, I might go there. They don't have Chris Bryant. They got a lot of money. It comes down to money. And I don't think there's any danger of them damaging their reputation. Maybe I'm naive about it, but I find this whole storyline tiresome. I've always found storylines like these tiresome. Do your job. If Chris Bryant ever becomes a big distraction, then they actually will trade him. Then they will speed that up, and then that will become a reason that they don't get value for the guy. I just have a hard time viewing that guy as disgruntled, as somehow out of whack and a team destroyer.
Well, almost,
it doesn't work for
I
me.
I almost wonder if that's like the issue. I mean, because he has done nothing except for be a professional. And even when he was approached last week about, you know, the limbo that he finds himself in Las Vegas, he's like, I don't want to talk yet because I haven't spoken to the Chicago media. That is not a disgruntled guy. That's a guy trying to be fair, trying to be a pro, and trying to do everything that we have seen him do since he came up, you know, in 2015. This is a professional who I think is low maintenance. And that is the thing to me why he's it's unfortunate to see these kind of headlines. It's unfortunate to see this kind of perception being built. I do think the Cubs have to be – they can't ignore some of the things that are going on right now because, number one, this has gone on a long time. The status of Chris Bryant has dominated the offseason because nothing else – they've done nothing else really. Also, the other storyline that you have to kind of keep an eye on if you're the Cubs front office is, you know, Anthony Rizzo has been pretty open about wanting an extension and not getting one. And I think that's probably ground that the Cubs should not move from because I wouldn't do it either. But these things, when you're talking about the guys who, you know, are part of your foundation, part of your core, and part of your identity, not really getting what they want, It does create this sort of undercurrent, and that you can't ignore. Not that it's going to be the main factor in free agency. Not that that's ever going to be the thing that dominates. It's always about money. But if you care about your reputation around the league and how you deal with players, it's something that continues to be there until it isn't. And right now, the limbo is hanging there as they get ready to report to Arizona.
You know, there's no such thing as distractions in locker rooms and clubhouses anymore, because that supposed distraction will last as long as the player wants it to. I bet you Chris Bryant will address the issue once, maybe a couple times. Maybe he'll even let it go throughout spring training. But there comes a point in time where, in this day and age, if a player is dealing with some hot-button topic, he or she will cut it off as soon as they want and say, no more questions about this, and that will go to the rest of the clubhouse where they will not answer questions about it, and reporters eventually will stop asking about it. So it simply will not be a distraction. I mean, think about last year with Addison Russell and what should have been a legitimate distraction. He comes out, talks once, and then that's it. We're not going to talk about it anymore. I'm not going to answer any more questions about it. It's over. It's not a distraction. As far as the reputation of the Cubs, I don't think it hurts them at all, because it's not like the Cubs came up with or invented the idea of manipulating service time. This was a bad deal done by the players. Management figured out a way to manipulate it, and it's not like Theo Epstein invented this concept. And while it sucks for Brian, and he lost the grievance and he doesn't like that, I believe that it's not personal, and the Cubs certainly are not the only evil organization that would do such a thing.
One other thing, Mark,
yeah.
This idea that in the new collective bargaining agreement, well, that's going to be something they iron out. Why? It doesn't help the majority of players. It's something that they can as a negotiating tool. But only the real superstars have to worry about that. So why would the rest of the league care if it's going to affect their money? I just don't think it's a cause celeb.
Grody, are you saying that distractions had nothing to do with Addison Russell on the field last year?
Oh, no. I think that Addison Russell personally was distracted by the stuff that he had, you know, done to himself. I'm saying that the other players weren't affected by it. That ultimately, like we talk about overall distraction, like, no, because they cut it off eventually. They stopped talking about it, and reporters stopped asking about it. Like, when I think of distraction, I think of something that goes on all year long, where it's really, like, hanging on the team. I don't think that it would be in a case like this. Wouldn't they be able to cut it off, David?
Maybe.
By the way, guys, good morning. Good to see you guys.
Morning, Grody. Yeah.
Grody time! Hey!
Bears.
I need that, Bears.
Good morning, Grody. Good to see you.
Hi, Ray.
Hey.
God, you're so nice, Ray.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to say that alienating Bryant by keeping him in limbo is more threatening to the Cubs, because in terms of the team's reputation for dealing with players, I agree with you, Mully. I agree that they don't have a bad reputation as it is for dealing with players. And if that is the thing that's going around, if players are concerned about that, they can contact Chris Bryant and hear it directly from him and say, hey, is this team, how do you feel about the way this team has been dealing with you? So the alienation of Chris Bryant is definitely more threatening to the Cubs.
Well, here's a question for two longtime newspaper guys, and I think I know the answer, but just in case. Headline: it's time for the Cubs to auction off disgruntled Chris Bryant. Okay. That headline almost has nothing to do with what's in print.
It had nothing to do with what's in print.
And for the print, the texter out there that wondered if I could read,
that's almost the point, Dustin, because it's such an unfair headline.
It's such an unfair headline. I mean, and I'm with Mully. Like, I don't think Chris Bryant is the type of guy who, at least publicly, is going to make a big deal of this. He handled it the right way by saying, listen, I'm going to talk to the reporters in Chicago that show up to spring training first. That's what I'm going to do first. And I also heard something this weekend that for the first time I thought, you know, that's a really good point. Chris Bryant is the player rep for the Cubs. Okay. And we heard the same thing kind of with Mookie Betts, where he might be doing this for as much the union as himself, right? Like, this might not be a Chris Bryant thing, but Chris Bryant is a mouthpiece, I guess, for the union and for the Cubs. So he might be diving in head first because of that. And if not for that, maybe this wouldn't be a thing. So if anything, it's just the players are going to get sick of answering the questions. But again, that's on the media. How many times can you ask the players?
Well, and
what's
plus
it
they'll
like?
They'll cut it off too. That's right, what I'm saying. Like, the players have more control over the media now than they ever have, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a great question.
With pitchers and catchers reporting this week, is there an obvious leadoff hitter on either side of town? Who would you pick for the Cubs? Who for the White Sox?
I don't think if you went through baseball, you would find obvious leadoff hitters on the majority of teams. I don't think that's today's game. It seems like mixing and matching tends to favor managers, and the heavy influence of analytics makes everybody sort of change their minds, you know, maybe after 10-day stints, and they try people here and they try people there. Look, if Kyle Schwarber can spend as long at the top of the order as he did, that was a couple of years ago, but teams are always going to be trying something new. That said, I don't know that the White Sox have an obvious one. I think people will make the argument for Yasmani Grandal. They'll look at his analytics, but I just have a hard time seeing that him getting to first, maybe coaxing a walk, and Ricky Renteria bunting him to second, because that's going to happen at some point. You know that's going to happen. It's going to drive people crazy. I think Grandal probably is better in a run-producing role. If you had to pick somebody on the opening day lineup that you can guarantee, if they don't like the idea of Luis Robert up there, I would favor Nick Madrigal, but since he's not going to be necessarily in their opening day automatically, Yoan Moncada would be fine with me. Speed, power, a little bit of everything. He can be selective when he wants, and he's proven that last year. As for the Cubs, the main story in their website, Cubs.com, this morning is what they're going to do at second base. Wow. That is a pressing issue. I like the idea of Nico Hoerner winning that job, staying in the lineup, and being the everyday leadoff hitter.
Yeah, I think tomorrow's question will be about neither team having a second baseman, an obvious second baseman. We'll get into that tomorrow. But I got to say, when you think about the Cubs, I mean, my God, why not use Jason Hayward there, right? They tried that at one point. It didn't work, but he apparently doesn't like it. Aren't you done trying to make him happy? I mean, you don't really have – is Albert Elmora Jr. going to be a center fielder? Is he your everyday center fielder? Mm. Is that what the idea is? Because then maybe you could try him at it. But I would try one of those two guys. And I know they like the idea of Schwarber, and I don't know how that works for Schwarber. It seemed to be a struggle for him. Here's the problem with the White Sox. You know, I get it, Moncada. Yeah, move Moncada in there. Here's the problem. Wasn't last year all about getting him to swing earlier in counts, getting him to not look at as many pitches? So now you're going to make him a leadoff guy again, and you're going to have him look at a bunch of pitches? I don't like that idea. Somebody said that Tim Anderson would be an option. How is that possible? He doesn't walk at all. So the guy that walks and the guy who's got the on-base percentage is actually Yaz. So I think I might go that route. I know that's unconventional, but you're kind of waiting for Madrigal or Luis Robert to develop into that role. And I think Grandal, while probably a better RBI guy, I think he could do it. And I think he's, you know, devoted enough to and willing enough to do it. So I probably would go that route.
This is a great question because there's really no obvious answer for either team. And yeah, at first blush with the White Sox, yeah, I would go Moncada because, you know, I still do think that there is significance in that first at-bat of the game. I know that you only lead off once, but I think that first at-bat of an entire game.
So you want him to work a count?
I do, and he's good at it. He's not afraid, as you said, Molly.
He had a lot of strikeouts the year before because he was
taking pitches.
Yes.
Yeah,
so they're trying to dissuade that.
No, you're right. You're right. But I just think, like, as far as, like, anybody in that lineup, like, who would not be afraid to take a pitch or two to see what the guy has, to work a count, even if he makes an out, to make the pitcher throw 5, 6, 7 pitches in an at-bat. I think that Moncada would be best suited for it. Yeah, I'm down with Grandal, but there's just no other obvious place, and even those two guys don't feel like slam dunks. For the Cubs, the only thing I know about the Cubs, as far as a leadoff guy, is that as who I don't want, who I don't even want to see on the opening day roster, is Nico Horner.
Come on.
I don't want to
Grody.
See that. Haw, why?
You can go home now.
Why do you want to see Nico Horner?
Why don't you?
Because I've seen too many of the Cubs players who we think are ready, and then they get sent right back. How about when
he's not Gary Scott, Grody.
No.
This is tomorrow's question, by the way.
I'm talking about, well, you've got tomorrow lined up, Molly. You've got it lined up.
Work ahead.
Let's get right to Tuesday. I've seen too many of these guys. Remember when Ian Happ came up? I remember when Ian Happ came up. And I think it was against the Reds.
So young,
and
everybody,
but listen, hold on. But Ian Happ comes up, and everybody said, this guy is never going back down again. He has struggled. He did go back down. Albert Almora Jr. We all thought, okay, this guy's a great defensive player. He's going to be the leadoff hitter for us. He went back down. Kyle Schwarber comes up, needs more development. Guess who got sent back down again? Kyle Schwarber. Addison Russell, another guy for the Cubs who came up. Well, we got to send him back down. Like, a lot of these Cubs players simply were not ready. And if there was ever a year where you didn't have to force your top prospect onto the roster, it would be this year. Get him up eventually, but let him work it out in the minors before he comes up.
I will counter that argument tomorrow.
Okay. Tomorrow's going to be awesome, man.
What a tease.
Can't wait for the show.
Well, I'd love to see Horner break camp, but Grody, I agree. If he's ready, if he looks good, if he's ready, why keep him, keep him in the minors? Let him break camp if he looks good enough, because this second base, what are you going to do with second base? I mean, what are we going to do, more David Bodie? I'm sorry, David, I know that's your guy, and maybe he'll have a resurgent 2020 season. Maybe he will. I hope he does. But for now, from what we've seen, the second base position for the Cubs leaves a lot to be desired. They need to fill that hole. So I'd like to see Horner break camp if he's ready. If not, and if he does, he could lead off. He could be a leadoff candidate. But other than that, if he does not break camp, I'd like to see. I like the idea of trying Hayward there, or the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, Anthony Rizzo. You can start off with Riz. And for the White Sox, if Madrigal breaks camp, I'd love to see him lead off. If not, I know Tim Anderson doesn't take a lot of walks, but he certainly has the speed of a leadoff hitter. Maybe Tim Anderson. I also like Moncada, the idea of Moncada. So Anderson or Moncada on the south side.
It's Rizzo for the Cubs. It's Rizzo. Let's just start there right off the bat. Don't screw around with it. Let's just start there right away. And I also think for the White Sox, whoever plays second base on opening day is who's going to bat leadoff. That's what I think is going to happen. Whoever it is, we don't know right this second. But I could say with conviction that whoever is penciled in to play second base on opening day will also be at the top of the Sox lineup.
Yeah, another really good question.
How do you envision James McCann's role with the White Sox? Is he a personal catcher, trade bait, pinch hitter, or DH?
Okay, it's a difficult role. I don't think I want him to be a personal catcher, and I'll tell you why. I think that there's this assumption he's going to be a personal catcher for Giolito. Who's going to be the opening day starter? Giolito, right? So what do? You have Yaz sit on the bench on the first day of the season or maybe start him at DH?
Yeah.
Well, that would be odd. You're right.
I'm just saying.
Here's our big free agent. He's on the bench.
This guy's the greatest framer in the history of the world. We got the best catcher in baseball. He's number four in war. I mean, okay, we can't use him. No, we're not going to use him here. I just think that, and then let me ask you this. If he ends up being trade bait, which is, you need something, there's some injury, something didn't work out, you got to make a deal. James McCann sitting there, former All-Star. Oh, wait, no, now Giolito doesn't have his catcher. We'll just switch his catcher off, as we start the season. It doesn't make sense to me. So I think, why can't Grandal help Giolito? If he's that good, couldn't he help Giolito? So I think that James McCann's fighting for a role. And I think that at this point, I think I'm more likely to hope for him to be a pinch hitter DH type than a guy that is going to. I mean, he'll have to get some starts, but I don't know that I want him catching my ace, if indeed that's how we're viewing Lucas Giolito.
Well, I think he's going to be a team guy. I think he said all the right things. He's reiterated that time and again. He's going to be a consummate professional. I think we're overthinking it in terms of the opening day thing, because even if Grandal's in the lineup out of because it's a ceremonial thing and you want to start your free agent guy, it doesn't mean that Giolito can't pitch to James McCann every fifth day after that. Or you can't even use, maybe it's a right-hander on the mound for the White Sox or for the opponent on opening day, and the Sox have Grandal DH.
They're playing Kansas City. Wouldn't Duffy be the starter?
Probably.
Let's do that tomorrow. Duffy tomorrow.
Who's going to start for the Royals on opening day?
Yeah.
Tuesday, 5-5.
We got time. You know?
Look, James McCann is playing. They're paying him well to play a role, and not everybody can be, you know, a starting, you know, catcher on a competitive team, and the Sox are serious about contending, so this is what he's going to do. I like the idea of Giolito having his guy. I like the idea of having an extra resource behind Grandal because of injury or whatever. You can have some more flexibility there. James McCann also has a connection with Dallas Keuchel. That's the chemistry. They go back to college. They were battery mates at Arkansas. They're Razorbacks together. I just think there are too many intangibles. And also things that he offers in terms of as a defensive catcher, just in the clubhouse, on the bench during the games. He's a valuable player on this roster, and getting rid of him, you probably would miss him. And I think with Giolito, it's not broken. Don't try to fix it. If he is a guy that he wants to pitch to every fifth day, it worked last year, it could work again.
I don't want to overthink this question. How do you envision James McCann's role with the White Sox? I envision him as a terrific backup. He was really good last year as the White Sox starting catcher. He had a career year, one that I don't think that he would be able to top. And then you go out and you get somebody this year in Grandal who is, we believe, better than this guy. So that means that you have yourself a really good backup catcher, which is a valuable commodity, I think, in this league, to where you don't have that backup catcher drop-off, where it's not vast, where you're not giving up a day when you don't have your starting catcher in there. So I just think that this is a luxury that the White Sox have that a lot of teams throughout Major League Baseball don't have. So just enjoy the fact that you have two-plus catchers on your team. And, yeah, I mean, I suppose that you don't want Grandal catching every day. So if that means that it's Giolito for James McCann, that's fine. If it's a rapport that those two are building and part of Giolito's success is because of him, then that's great. But I just think that this is a luxury, and simply look at it as he's a terrific backup.
Well, I agree that he is a really good luxury, Grody. I do. But his role, I think, yes, personal catcher to Giolito. I agree with the idea that you don't want to change that up. You don't want to trade him. He was very important. He had such an important role to the turnaround season that Lucas Giolito had last year. So you want to keep that personal catcher relationship going. I think he'll be in the rotation of DH with Encarnacion. Maybe we'll see Collins there. So he'll be in the rotation there. And sure, a pinch hitter. So he's a lot of things for the White Sox. And I understand offensively he had the second half of the season was not as great as that first half was. But hopefully he'll turn things around on offense and actually be valuable off the bench as a pinch hitter and a DH.
How's his framing?
Framing, outstanding framing.
Outstanding framer?
He's no Grandal, but I think he's an outstanding framer.
Okay. He's actually supposedly, if you look at some of the advanced metrics, he's as good a high ball framer as anybody. So that might be what Lucas Giolito does more. Maybe that's why it works.
I love a good high ball.
I have no problem with him being the personal catcher of Lucas Giolito as long as you work in some time with the other guy. Because Grandal, you know, if the Sox make it to the postseason, Grandal's going to be in that lineup. Now, I guess you could say if McCann's really having a good year, okay, maybe you can get away with Grandal as the DH in that game, right? Guy can't catch every day.
You're telling me that Edwin Encarnacion doesn't get to play against Danny Duffy because, I mean, I don't know.
Well, the guy's an awful good pitcher. I'm talking about specifically in the playoffs, Mully. I'm saying, like, during the regular season, it shouldn't matter as much. Okay, what's more important, Giolito feeling comfortable out there or getting Encarnacion's bat out there? Well, you know, you better be able to beat the Royals, even if James McCann is the DH in that game.
But okay? Danny Duffy's a really good pitcher, and he's a left-handed pitcher. Okay. So wouldn't you want to gear up your lineup to face that guy?
You're much more invested in it than I am, and that's a good way to look at it. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, McCann is going to have to catch a handful of games. You can't break Grandal down like that. So if you're going to have him behind the plate once a week, it does seem to make sense to have him with Lucas Giolito. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, all good questions.
What did you make of Sunday's Daily Herald report that John Paxson is, quote, likely out as Bulls head of basketball operations at the end of this season?
Well, okay, so I saw that, and my first reaction was it is what it always is when I see these kind of things. And this is probably a pet peeve of mine, and I know I'm probably splitting hairs. But after years of being in the business, when you report something is likely to happen, you're not reporting anything at all. You're guessing. Now, that guess may be on informed sourcing, and it may be an educated guess, but you're guessing. You don't report something is likely to happen. You report when something will happen, or something does happen, or something won't happen. But likely to is just addressing a topic in a way that allows you to serve your audience with a subject that people are interested in, and everybody can kind of presume is going to be true, like this one. I think the surprise at this point would be if John Paxson doesn't, or the Bulls don't make changes in their front office. Are you watching the same season? Of course they're going to address this. Of course it's going to include something, you know, in terms of how the hierarchy is structured or framed and who comes in and a fresh set of eyes. They have one victory over a winning team. It's February 10th. This team stinks. They've got a coach who's trolling everybody by calling timeouts late in games for no other reason except for he can. I don't know what Jim Boylan was doing yesterday with 10 seconds left. It's down seven and calling another. He did it again. So to me, this got a lot of attention. It'll maybe get some traction, but it's a report about something likely to happen, which just seems sort of flimsy to me because everybody understands what's going on here.
Yeah, it's pretty much a maybe that they perhaps would make a change of some sort, according to a few sources. Some sources would say, I mean, come on, what is this? Sources say Paxson out, right? Okay, source says Paxson out. Okay, wow, there's something going on there. That guy's been with it for a long time. Likely out? I mean, I don't know. The qualifier puts me off a little bit. Just not quite sure what's likely or unlikely. Bulls unlikely to make playoffs? I get it.
Source said that they are unlikely to make the playoffs this year.
There's all sorts of things you hear, but is it going to happen? Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. If it did happen, one thing that I would be very pleased with, honestly, is that John Paxson could go back to being, if it's him that is dismissed or likely out, he could go back to being the highly likable guy who hit threes for the Bulls in the 1990s, and a guy who did. It is easy to forget that John Paxson did help to restore order to the post-Jordan years, which were just god-awful, historically awful for a while until the Kirk Heinrich, Lou Alding, Ben Gordon era. So for the sake of Paxson's legacy and the sake of his lifestyle, I think it would be healthy for him and for the fans of this town and for the franchise because, you know, I mean, we're all seeing it. We've all talked about it, the fact that attendance is starting to drop, and I think that that's where you start to hear the leaks coming out of the most powerful people with the Bulls organization. When they see that, that's what gets their attention, and that's what makes them think that you need more than just a coaching change or who is the guy out in front talking to the media change. You need real change. So I kind of hope it's true for the, and I think it would be good for, I think it would be healthy for everybody if it was true.
What I make of this report is I'll believe it when I see it. Can I envision John Paxson in the type of Kenny Williams kind of role with the White Sox as he is to a future general manager or whatever? I could see him being in an advisory role, but I'll believe it when I see it just because this team has been going nowhere for so long, has been directionless for so long. I could see another lifeline given to Pax, to Gar and Pax.
And this report is hardly unequivocal, right?
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll believe it when the actual press release from the team is sent out.
I think when you have something like this, what you want to see is who is likely to replace him. If you know somebody is, you know, they're eyeing somebody or they're considering somebody, and somebody that, like, that's the surprising element of any sort of quote unquote news report.
But this goes back to the question we asked earlier about the headline with Chris Bryant, okay? Now, it's all about clicks and looks and sees, and the Daily Herald wants people to click on their stories, so they put a splashier, sexier, clickable headline on a story. I mean, this is something, I mean, great. I mean, they the bulls stink out loud and they need change at the top. We all know that. That's nothing new. Like I said, give me a name. Right. Give me a name. Give me a scenario. Put your name on it. You know, if it's Dan, who is it? Who wrote it again? Who was the author?
Mike McGraw.
Then, you know, I, Mike McGraw, think that John Paxson is going to be out of here next year. I think they should replace him with X person. Okay, have an opinion. That's fine, right? Isn't that okay?
Not in a news story. Answer the question.
What do you think of the XFL? Do you have a favorite team yet? Will you watch next week?
I enjoyed the XFL. I thought it was kind of cool. I do like football, and I thought it was good. I saw the ratings number, and I'm sure we'll hear it all day, that it was 3.2 million, and it hit 4 million at one point on, was it Sunday or Saturday afternoon? So that's great. It's great that there's more football out there. I think the NFL needs a league like this. They need a minor league. There are a lot of players that still want to play. A lot of coaches still want to coach. You know, there's some great stories from the old World League, from other places where people have tried to play football and keep it going. The Kurt Warners of the world. So I like the idea of it. I don't know. I don't have a favorite team. I think I'll probably watch next week. I don't know that I'll be watching like week 9 or week 10. And that's really what this is all about. The XFL understands it's not about the people that turn up to the games. It's about the audience on television. So the fact that it's on network television where you can easily access it, and, you know, it was on ABC and you got ESPN and Fox and FS. One, I mean, I think that will help because casual sports fans will pretty much watch anything. You go into a sports bar, it's on a TV, people will sit in front of it. So that's a good thing for them. But I don't know that I'm long-term with this league.
I want to couch it by saying that I was behind the AAF after the first weekend, too.
Yes.
So we take ourselves back
exactly.
A year. I loved everything I saw from that. But this weekend was fun because ABC and Fox did a nice job of packaging these games. It gave it more of a sharp presentation, and it made it seem a little bit more legitimate. And I think that's what every new league wants is legitimacy. And that's what you found over the weekend. I like the idea of Cardale Jones throwing darts. And I like the idea the tackling was a little bit better than I thought. The blocking, too, and the quarterback play will define how well and how long those audiences stay and they want to come back for more, because that is what everybody, even the NFL, if you have good quarterback play, your league has a chance. As for the new rules, I think there's some intriguing new rules. I love the kickoff. I love the idea of having the kickoff, the coverage team lining
preserving
up at the 35. Yeah, you preserve a kickoff, and you have actually actual strategy returning to that play, which the NFL sort of has written off. I don't like the elimination of the extra point. There are a lot of things we could get to, but I liked it. It's football. I don't have a favorite team yet, except for, I guess, if I were to say one, How about the Chicago franchise? Can they start a Chicago franchise? Call it whatever you want, but after seeing one weekend of football, I'm convinced, Grody, Chicago needs an XFL team.
Oh, yeah. Well, how about Los Angeles? They now have three professional football teams from having nothing, zero. They got the two NFL teams. Are these pro teams, by the way? Do we consider the XFL? They're pros.
Paid.
Okay, they're pros. So, yeah, they now have somehow, some way, there are three professional teams because they totally have the LA Extreme out there now. Did I hear the name Joe Horn yesterday? I think Joe Horn, the old New Orleans Saints receiver, I want to say he's a player. That's the only thing I gave it about 10 minutes yesterday, and that's all I was listening for and watching for was old familiar names. I love some of the coaches that exist, like they pop back out. Jerry Glanville, obviously our favorite around here. Mark Trestman is really interesting to see all the, like, I'd like to look at a list of all the assistant coaches and all the personnel throughout this league because there'll probably be some pretty hilarious names on it. I'll go with, since nobody else has given a favorite team yet, I'll go with the Orlando Rage as my favorite team. I also enjoyed, by the way, yesterday, as far as the broadcast goes, like Greg Olson doing some analyzing. I thought he was really good.
Very
along
good.
With Kevin Burkhardt.
So. Grody, I'm worried about you, though. Get your hearing checked. Joe Horn is 48 years old. I don't think he was on a field yesterday.
I'm telling you.
Wow.
There was
some guy went for a cell phone.
Somebody texted that it's Joe Horn Jr., maybe?
Okay.
Oh, I mean, all right. That's what I thought.
That may make more sense.
I did see some Ricky Proehl's kid caught
yes,
a touchdown.
Yes, Austin Proehl, so. First touchdown. Yeah.
Well, in terms of the XFL, the rules and all that, I like the transparency in the review process, and you just get to see the process in the booth of the what the review official is talking to the head referee about. I like the no extra points and the idea of doing a play from different spots on the field. You can choose between 3, 2, and 1 point conversions. I love that. In terms of favorite teams, I'm split between the DC Defenders and the New York Guardians. I like the defensive showing of both of those teams.
Wow, you're going deep.
Yes,
you're
right. I wish I would have. I want to like the Vipers because
you
of
hate
guard,
their
my,
secondary, though. You told me that before the show.
I did.
Started, so
I sure
they,
did.
They can't guard.
But the Vipers, I wish I could like the Vipers, but they have a QB problem, kind of
they
like
do.
The other Tampa Bay team.
Yep,
a QB problem.
Yep,
that's wasn't he the guy that was potentially Mitch Trubisky's future backup. It's all about the quarterbacks, and you got to be into that. I did see some tight ends catch some balls. We didn't see a lot here with the Bears this year and break some tackles afterwards. It was fun. Jerry Glanville wearing two headsets at the same time. it was fun. I watched more on Saturday than I did on Sunday. Watched a lot of college basketball if we're asking what we watched. I'll watch again next week. But the key is, right, the key is week 5, week 6, week
right.
7. That's the key.
Yep. All right. 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.